This podcast represents the opinions of Whiskey Wheels Wounds and guests to the show. The content here is for informational use only and should not be taken as medical advice. Consult your healthcare professional for medical questions. Views and opinions expressed are our own or guests and do not represent any organization we are a member of. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statement or opinion made. This podcast contains explicit language and mature content. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Whiskey, Wheels, and Wounds. I'm Sean Naber, 9-year United States Air Force vet.
And I am Steve Vickers, 22-year U.S. Army veteran.
I'm good.
I'm good.
Let's ride.
Okay, boys, time for the show.
All right, everybody. We got a good but interesting episode today. This one, we've got two veterans with us. Both of them have service dogs. We have Sean and his dog, Nick. And then we have Morgan, whose service dog after 8.5 years just recently retired. And he'll be getting a new one in a couple of weeks. And we're going to talk about, you know, how the service dog impacts their lives and how it's made everything better for them. And then they're going to touch on Southeastern Guide Dogs and what they do as a mission and how they help. So welcome, gentlemen.
Well, thanks for having us. Thank you. Pretty excited.
Yeah. So Sean, how did your process of obtaining a service dog start?
So I hit that fork in the road that so many of our recipients hit, where you have to make a decision. For me, my wife said I need to get some help after I lodged the remote control to our TV in our bedroom into the wall, and it stayed in the wall. I had been triggered, and she said, you need to get some help in order to keep my family, in order to keep my, you know, my sanity and to keep from pushing myself even further off the brink. That was the moment. We started looking. I was taking 16 pills a day that day. I was 285 pounds. I was quickly disconnecting with life. And we found that service dogs were helping. Guys were taking less medication. They were losing weight. Where could I go wrong? You know, 285 pounds. Mm-hmm. Ooh, on my frame, not a good idea.
I'm 350. I get it.
Whew. Yeah. I just dropped down another 40 pounds here since January. Nice. But it's that process was something that we did together, which was really exciting because it's something I think I can honestly say it's probably the first thing as a married couple that we did effectively together. You know, of course, marriage, that's a whole nother topic that we could jump on a whole nother train, but, we found service dogs were the help.
Right.
So we found that we started digging and we found Southeastern Guide Dogs. And when we found Southeastern Guide Dogs, watched the YouTube videos and it was no question.
Right.
We put the applications in. I asked over 150 questions to the instructors once I got that call. I always remember and talk about the day that I got the call that I got a dog from Southeastern Guide Dogs because I was at the VA when I got the call. I had just been told they had taken 5 polyps out of my colon. I was borderline high cholesterol, diabetes, high blood pressure, you name it. Doctor was just laid on me and then went, oh, well, have a great day. We'll see you next appointment. Mm-hmm. And I'm like trying to bottle everything in, trying to hide it. And I get to the truck and that call comes in that there's a dog for you. And I just broke down crying. And I'm not a crier. I mean, I'm a Harley Davidson rider.
Right.
I'm not a crier.
Right.
It changed my life. That was probably one of the best decisions I made in my entire life was to get a service dog.
And we have done an episode called Ripple Effect that we've done with our spouses. How the things that we have gone through, the things that that we battle with every day affect them. And, you know, night terrors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're both on our second marriage and things of that nature. Exactly.
I'm on the third. I'm right. On the third. Third time's the charm.
And you know, it's important for your spouse to recognize, A, you have a problem, mm-hmm. and B, be supportive enough to say, we're going to fight this together.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one of the cool things I've learned as I've grown as a veteran living with PTSD that I've been able to sow into younger veterans as they get out is it's not your spouse's job to understand where you are. Mm-hmm. They're not going to understand, and it's not their fault. It's their responsibility to hold us up and carry us when we're down. Yeah. But it's our responsibility to understand, okay, this is where I am now. How do I push forward? This is my new mission. But we can't hold them accountable for what we don't even know we're right. dealing with. Yeah. Yeah. And most a lot certainly. Of young veterans don't understand that these days.
Most certainly. And I think that extends out to the VA. Mm-hmm. It extends out to, you know, a lot of young veterans nowadays is it's all about what are you going to do for me?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, and we're huge advocates about if you want fixed, you have to fix you.
Yep.
Right. You have to go and grab people by the arm and say, help me.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Morgan, how did you get started on your path with a guide dog?
I guess, at the age of 42, when I started dealing with so much chronic pain, I kind of hit an existential crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I questioned everything, and, you know, I had buried so many emotions of so much trauma over the years. It was year after year, all the different things would happen, and I never felt it all the way along the way. I just tucked it away and kept on trucking, and I was – you know, high speed, low drag, let's go. And always be on the mission. And when I started dealing with so much pain that I wasn't functional anymore, I lost my career. I went down that rabbit hole of depression that just about took my life.
Yeah.
It was every day for about 2 years like that. You know, and I didn't know the way out. I was trying all the therapy, all the pills, everything, and I didn't really feel better. And thanks to my wife, she was the one that actually originally found Southeastern Guide Dogs and interviewed there and went to work. And then I said, you know, my therapist was saying, hey, Morgan, you really need to get out of the house at least. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll volunteer down there. So I started going down there, you know, spraying out kennels and hanging around the dogs. And I was only working like 2 hour shifts because that's all I could handle. Right. It was just, you know, that's all I could do in the day. And I came home and I was like, God, I actually felt better down there. And she was the one that actually said, Morgan, I think you should look into getting a service dog from this program. And that saved my life, completely saved my life. All of those dark days didn't completely stop, but I could see an end to them with this dog that was there 24/7 for me all the time. Just something so far outside of the box that I thought was going to fix me, which, you know, some things can't be fixed. But
right.
We can have better days than we've had before. We can improve. We can be functional. We can be productive. We can be there for each other, you know. And it's like once you get that new mission and having that furry companion next to you 100% of the time, non-judgmental, unconditional love, it's just that's not even human, you know. So you get that, and it's just like a whole new lease on life.
When I came home from good, you know, years of compartmentalizing to be able to function over there and stuff, the wife knew something was wrong before I knew something was wrong, of course. And, you know, she would be gone at work. The kids would be gone at school. And so I'm left to sit on the recliner and just stare at the walls.
Yeah.
And that's when all that compartmentalization. So instead of dealing with each individual event, you deal with 7 years of events. Like that.
That's right.
And we had a 3-year-old golden doodle. Her name is Maddie. She's like 102 pounds. She's a big girl. But with no formal training or anything, she was so empathetic that she knew when I was going down that hole before, and she just put her big old body up on me. Just she would just know, hey, he needs something, and I got something that I can give him. And I tell people all the time, she passed away when she was 9, and when she died, I lost my battle buddy. Like it was devastating to me because she was special, and not even being formally trained. So I can't even imagine how having one of these companions who's actually formally trained to know what to look for and how to do and all that, how it could be beneficial to you. Because like I said, just her was enough to help me hold it together long enough for me to accept that I had a problem and then go from there. Cause if it wouldn't have been for her, I don't think I could have held it together as long as I did.
Yeah. It's with these dogs, man, it's really amazing. Some of the things they're able to do, the things that they pick up on. And as I say a lot these days, the newer models, cause we both have older models that we've retired. The newer models are so much more advanced as compared to what our older models were able to do. It's night and day. It's so incredible. And I've been pouring this into Morgan for the last few weeks now, ever since we found out about Foley retiring. I was like, you have no idea what you're in store for.
So is it, as you guys have the dogs and you provide the feedback, they modify their training routines, or is it also with the breeding program as well? So like, are they breeding better traits based off of feedback from you guys and then developing better training, or?
Yeah. So that it all goes back to, you know, when we got our dogs, we weren't on a positive reinforcement system. We said the word no quite often with both of our dogs, sure. With Pella and Foley. Now these dogs are raised where if you say no, they know, oh, I've messed up. They turn into the child that is getting the look. Right. And it's just, they will love to work. And they love to try and do things to figure out, okay, is this what you want me to do? Is this what you want me to do? And then when they figured out the moments that connect to what you want them to do, they start doing it on their own. We walk in the elevator. Nick immediately comes with my legs and sits down. It's been something that we've been working on consistently. And it's just amazing. I remember the first 3 weeks after we graduated, we were at home. And I was laying on my spinal manipulator, just trying to loosen up my back. So I've got degeneration in my spine. And the pain got so bad that all I could do was just lay there. And we've all experienced that at one point or another. All I could do was just lay on the floor. He got up off of his bed without me saying a word and just came and laid on top of me. Something in that released something in my body that the pain started to go away. And then because I have a prosthetic knee, it only goes one direction. He was able to help me get up with the brace position. And that to not have to ask for that, and he already knew that within 3 weeks, it took Pella a little bit longer than that to learn some of the basic stuff that we were trying to, as far as being able to do it without me having to ask. 3 weeks, I in 2 years, this is going to be scary. He's going to be talking for me in two years.
Now, is Pella who you had with you last year?
No. So I had Nick last year. Okay. Pella retired in July of 2021, about 90 days after WrestleMania. as I like to say, WrestleMania was her swan song. She got me to that bucket list item, and then she was diagnosed with severe storm anxiety, and she was forced into retirement. But, yeah, she still to this day sits and watches WWE when it comes on TV. So I guess I did something right. it's cool, though. It's having two in the house, you know, I got the opportunity to see the handoff or the change of command. We're on a military podcast. Let's talk military. Right. I got to see the change of command ceremony. We throw a ball in the house, right, and all in the hallway. And as we're throwing the ball for the first few weeks as they got home, Pella would run to get the ball, bring the ball back because she knew, okay, I'm the ace. This is my house. Third week we throw the ball. She runs, stops, lets him get the ball, bring the ball back to me. And it's been that way ever since. So we literally saw the right. change of command yeah. ceremony happen right there in the hallway in the house. And it's so cool to see those moments.
So in 3 weeks, he picked up things that you weren't expecting. And in 3 weeks, she understood I'm not the worker anymore.
It's been and when I say she's retired, oh, she goes out back. We'll be like, all right, let's go in the house. And she throws me a nice, strong middle finger and lays down.
So Morgan, you mentioned earlier about functioning, non-functioning, not being able to, you know, a lot of veterans think that they're, you know, they're functioning alcoholics, they're functioning drug addicts, they're functioning overeaters, they're functioning from a porn addiction, whatever that vice is. What we fail to realize is when, the more we think we're functioning, the more that we're leaning on everyone around us. We're leaning on our coworkers, we're leaning on our friends, we're leaning on our spouses. And that weight, you know, it becomes a burden. And, you know, it just, and you mentioned how the dog relieves some of those burdens. And, you know, on every episode, we kind of tie our vices and we tie leisure. And I would say that, you know, the dogs would be a leisure, a stress reliever, right? And just having something, you know, that's there, and it automatically calms you, automatically helps you. Every time I feel bad, no matter what time of the year it is, especially in Ohio, when I get on a bike and go outside, I'm automatically a little bit better, no matter what it is. I've had some personal tribulations this week, and you know, that's got my mind spinning. And but I put 600 miles on the bike in the last 3 days just to, you know, just to calm, you know, quiet the mind. So I have a dog at home. He's a German Shepherd, and
like what you think of as a German Shepherd is not what Bear is.
This is the second attempt of a podcast outside of the Brick Corner Tavern, my personal bar at my house that we've attempted to record in. But he's in every episode. He's not as good as Nick. I mean, he lays for a long period of time, but, you know, at about an hour and 15 minutes, he has to get up and go outside.
You hear the door squeaking
in and out. And most episodes
on the floor.
Oh, yeah. But, I didn't grow up per se with dogs. I had a dog, I like to say my last family. My old family, we had a dog, and I had a boxer named Brutus. When I was deployed, my wife gave him away, right? And I didn't think, again, the crying thing, I didn't think it would impact me as such. You know, you come home and your dog's not there. You're like, what happened?
It's pain right there.
Right. He ran away, you know what I mean? And you're like, he's chipped, right? Like, find him.
Yeah, right.
You know, but, you know, but that's why she's the ex-wife. But so Southeastern guide dogs, how many dogs currently are they, the PAWS or Patriots program, supplying to veterans right
so
now?
We place about 125 to 150 dogs a year.
Okay.
On a daily basis, our company is responsible for over 1,000 dogs on one day across the United States, from Washington State all the way down to Key West, Florida. We got somebody moving to Hawaii here soon, so I can't wait to get responsibility to go see them.
Right.
it's a daunting task that our company undertakes, but it's a mission that is game-changing. These dogs, I mean, you said it earlier, something you said earlier, it really stuck to me. You said it, you know, two-wheel therapy, these dogs are, yes. I mean, I was a Harley rider for years. He is my two-wheel therapy right now, because I can no longer ride.
Right.
It's to be able to provide that at no cost, first of all.
That's huge.
Yeah. That by itself, because the VA only pays us so much.
Right.
The gap between 90% and 100% is over $1,700 for some reason. To be able to say, okay, you don't have to worry about dog food. You don't have to worry about monthly preventatives. You don't have to worry about anything but taking care of your dog
ever,
for free.
Ever.
For the life of the dog.
Right.
And then the next dog once they've retired.
Right. Yeah. And then if something happens, we'll send somebody out to make sure that you're all squared away. We got hit by a FedEx truck 3 weeks right after graduation. And literally, if I had lived in Washington State, somebody would have been on a plane the next day to make sure we were good. That dedication to the mission, that dedication to our nation's veterans for free, you can't beat that.
Right.
It is the greatest gift that you can give a person living with what we all live with.
Yeah.
Because you're providing the crutch that we all, you know, we all have our vices that we've used to get by. When I was on the motorcycle scene, we were all living with the same things.
Right. Yep.
We all live with pain, PTSD. We could drink a liter of Jack a night. We could drink a liter of Woodford a night and feel nothing.
Right.
Right.
And go about our business and ride 250 miles to the next stop. It's these dogs replace that need. Yeah. Do I miss my Harley? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You need what I got.
Every day. No, not doing it. You got a trike or.
I got a sidecar.
No, can't do it.
I think one of the greatest things about these dogs we'll talk. Is that, you know, you talk about all of these vices.
Right.
They're all numbing. They numb you out, you know, because you don't want to feel it.
Yep.
These dogs actually put that safe space around you to allow you to feel it so that you can heal it.
Now a word from our sponsor, Ohio Cigar Mafia. Are you in the state of Ohio and a cigar enthusiast? Join the ranks of over 200 members who enjoy a good stick paired with a sip of their favorite spirit as they raise money for veterans. Ohio Cigar Mafia is a 501c3 who supports the Southeastern Guide Dogs. They allow veterans to witness a brighter future through the eyes of a service dog. Thank you, Ohio Cigar Mafia, for your support. You're feeling, but it's positive.
It's positive.
For something after a long time of negative, you know, getting beat over the head with negative stuff, you now have a positive.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we're so happy you guys are on. Every week we're trying to find, and one of the organizations that I work with, Mission 22, we made sure Mission 22 does not take a cookie cutter approach to helping veterans. Every veteran heals differently. Every veteran responds to trauma, responds to treatment differently. And Mission 22 partners with a litany of organizations out there, be it equine therapy, be it they have a dog program as well. You know, the reason you don't have a cookie cutter is, like I said, everyone's different. So it's easy to say, you know, we like to ride motorcycles. That's, like I said before, that's our freedom. That's our release. But it's not for everybody. And if you can't, do you give up? No. You have to find an alternate, right? And or, hey, you know what? There's no rule that says you can't stack leisures. You know, you can't ride for an hour, get off, go, you know, go shoot for a while, go, you know, whatever the case may be. But, you know, but what you can't do at 3 a.m. when you know, you have a night terror, that the dog's there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, a lot of veterans out there, a guide dog is a symbol of a weakness, right? A symbol of I'm broken, right? It's a flag to the world that I'm broken.
Yeah, the
right?
old Scarlet A.
Yeah, yes. That's a target on
right.
that.
And they don't want to show outwardly how people already see them, mm-hmm. right? You know, like we've all said, our wives know when we're down before yep. we normally are aware that we're down. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's
easier to pretend you're not broken.
Yeah. How do you say, behind a mask? Right. How do you say I'm okay and you have a service dog? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you say I'm fine? Or how do you, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where the stigma out there is, you know, I'm hardened woodpecker lips. I'm unfazable, but you know, I don't want to tell people I'm fine and I have a service dog. But it's awesome, right? That you guys can come on and say, regardless of all that, the rewards outweigh any stereotypes, any stigmas, anything, you know. And what we try to do on this podcast is be real and raw and, you know, hit the both edges of the sword and be like, you know, there's veterans out there and we all know them. We all have buddies that think, you know, that the leisure part of Whiskey, Wills, and Runes are more of a negative mm-hmm. than the vices, right? Like it's cooler to drink a bottle of whiskey a night mm-hmm. than it is to say, hey, excuse me, I need help. Yep. I need a service dog. I need a, so that's where the stigma is when it's tougher, when you're considered tougher to do all the, quote unquote, air quotes, masculine, you know, alpha stuff that, you know, we've talked about in the past.
I think we all got pushed. When you get ingrained into the culture of adapt and overcome, that's just the mission. Right. That's how we operate as military. But one of the things that we've learned as service dog recipients is the first step you have to take is to say, I need help. That's the hardest step.
That's absolutely
the hardest your
step.
First step towards healing. It's your first step toward, and that's the biggest step that a man can take is to say, I need assistance.
Yes.
You know, once I started walking around in public, you know, with a service dog, I was kind of looking around. Everyone's looking at me and, then all of a sudden I realize they're not looking at me. They're looking at my dog.
Right.
Yep. You know, they don't even know I exist. I'm still invisible, you know. And what I found with actually having conversations with people was that my dog gave me the freedom to live authentically and to tell somebody, hey, you know what? Yeah, having a rough day. I would have never said that during my career, ever. Yeah. I would have never shown emotion, a vulnerability or anything. But by living more authentically, I've been able to connect at a deeper level with more people than I ever did throwing that hardened mask on.
That's
real, man. I remember being active duty, coming. I got medevac back in 08 with meningitis. After I got cleared to come back to duty, I had a febrile seizure, so I couldn't drive. I remember Savannah, Georgia, 3rd Infantry Division. It's the middle of the summer.
Rock of the morn,
all day, top of the rock. First sergeant stands in formation and says, if anybody helps Sergeant Brown get the formation, I'm going to cut your head off and watch it bleed. I'm standing right there. I needed help just to get to work because I just had, my brain was on fire for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
That by itself, that's traumatizing.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
That puts you in a place where it's like, oh, I have nowhere to go for assistance. No. I have nowhere to go for help. That hardens adapt and overcome.
Yeah.
And it, I just thought about that. It really kind of hit home where it's just like, man, that moment. I'll take it back to a humor side. I love to bring humor out of struggles,
yeah,
a struggle topic. But I was driving to the Charleston VA after I got out, about 6 months after I got out, and I hear this guy just laying on his horn. What's wrong with this guy? What is? And I look over, and it's the first sergeant. He's happy, just happier than pig, just waving at me. Hey, bro, how you doing? Dude, I got nothing to say to you, dude. What are we going to talk? You literally scarred me. And he changed the trajectory of my career because I had no one to talk to anymore.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I say a lot when we're speaking out down in Florida is something that most civilians will never understand. Every person that raised their right hand, went to basic training, and at least got through Valley Forge, rounds going over their head, mm-hmm. has experienced some kind of trauma.
Right.
That's real. Your average civilian is never going to understand being out in the middle of the woods with simulated grenades going off randomly in the middle of the night, going through a gas chamber for no reason. They're never going to understand that experience. That changes a person. That little bit, people always think, well, it's the combat vet. We need combat veterans. All veterans need this assistance mm-hmm. because all veterans have experienced trauma. It's not, you know, 45% of veterans experience speed. No, all veterans have experienced some kind of trauma once they raise that right hand. You get off the bus coming into basic training. Yeah. You're experiencing trauma.
I mean, that's a real experience.
Not y'all.
Yeah, you guys went to the pool. Air Force was at the pool.
Just so you know, when you get sent somewhere and they don't have a 5-star hotel,
right.
that's traumatic.
Trauma.
Okay?
That's trauma, right.
Hey, man, I got my trauma. Fork Dix, New Jersey, ground okay. combat. Okay, all right. So, yeah, I was there. I mean, Army cadre beat the crap out of us.
I remember getting off the plane in Iraq, and we had to get another C-130 to go to the FOB. Air Force was on our flight in. Those jokers were already headed to the pool. Hmm. Well, we were walking to the tarmac to get on our C-130. I'm like, what is this foolishness?
Yeah. I tell him the story that when in 05, we went from Bakuba, Iraq, down to Victory Base Complex. And they have, a bus route around Victory Base. And, we were in a police station where we could only shower every other day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, water depending. So we park the Humvees, we get on the bus, and these Air Force females get on the bus after us and walk by us smelling like perfume with earrings in, lipstick on. And I'm like, they don't even know there's a war going on outside. You know what
no
I mean?
No idea.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's it's funny.
Yeah. When I was in Bagram, we had Army guys that swing by and like, man, these Air Force chicks are hot. I'm like, you dude's been in the Army way too long.
If you were hot in the Army and you were hot in ACUs, you were hot outside ACUs.
Right, right.
That was a giveaway.
Yeah. And I was lucky enough to be on the Marn Express myself.
Gotta love it.
For many years. I was
Black hole. You know?
Well, yeah.
You can't get out the Marn train once you get on it.
Right. I was down in Fort Stewart early 90s, 94 to 96, and then went over to Fort Benning. It was in the 3rd Brigade, 3rd ID, over on Fort Benning for many more years after that. Every time I deployed was with the 3rd ID. So, and we've talked about the trauma of the Marn Express.
Dog-faced soldiers.
Yeah, and
every morning.
Right. But it's one of those things where you think, the leadership thinks they're helping. Yeah. You know, it's a hardening experience. And, I became that leader at some point. Suck that shit up, rub some dirt on it. Yep. And there's a difference between being injured and being hurt. And, now looking back with the great part about retrospect is, you can look back on things and be like, oh, that was a dick move.
Hindsight is always 20/20.
Hindsight, oh, for sure. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think it's awesome that these dogs bring so much quality to your guys' life. I think.
So how long did you have your dog?
I still have him.
Well, I mean, but yeah. I mean, we're actively
he's
working.
Alive. Yeah, still there.
Sorry. Actively working. How long was he actively working?
8.5 years.
Okay. So, and then he retired this past Monday.
Yes. Yeah.
So how has that changed you going out in public and things like that?
It was very interesting. You know, just walking through the airport today, I felt like I was naked.
Mm-hmm.
Felt very exposed. And when I was sitting on the airplane, all of a sudden I'm just like, God, why can't I stop these damn thoughts just racing and ruminating and going crazy? And I'm like, holy shit, I don't have my dog with me. And I really noticed that I was visibly more anxious because he wasn't with me for like the first time in a long time. And so it's been a challenge, but I also know that he took me from the deepest and darkest holes to where I am now, being able to come out here and mooch off of his dog and be able to just say, you know what? I'll be vulnerable.
Yeah.
I'll let you have it. You know,
he took you from the deep end to the shallow end. You're still in.
I'm still in. Yeah. And, you know, like I said before, I think there are things that won't necessarily heal, but you can have better days and you can be proactive with that. And that dog helps you be proactive because when they're waking up in the morning and it's time to get up, they're going to get you up and you're going to be on a schedule. They're going to want to eat certain times of the day. They're going to want to go outside.
I have five in the house.
Yeah.
Ooh, I know.
You're on a schedule. They know. They're telling you exactly what to do. And having a little bit of that structure back in your life when you're forced into retirement and you're not doing anything, you're sitting there, you know, kind of numbing out, and the dog's kind of like, hey, let's go for a walk. Hey, that's a damn good idea. Let's go.
So you're 4 days removed from retirement for your dog. And then how long between Pella and Nick for you?
It was a long 6 months.
Ooh.
Because I work for Southeastern Guide Dogs, so I was still out doing events. I was still going out and doing Beyond the Dark and the stuff and speaking at things. Luckily, we have our policy on campus where we can bring our pets to work with us. And when she retired, she became a pet. So she conveniently started coming to Beyond the Dark for a while until about 30 days before I got Nick. Because they started bringing random service dogs, air quotes, random service dogs into the Beyond the Dark experience to see how they reacted to noise. He was in the random group. I just didn't know it was him. It was, I could tell the recession was starting, or the regression was starting to happen because I stopped going to the places that I would normally go to just because I'm good. But I've gotten to the point now where if I've got my family member with me, or if I got my son or my daughter, I've got a 6-year-old. So 6-year-old plus a leash plus a 6-year-old by itself is a lot. But amen. I've come. Yeah,
I got a 6-year-old.
I'm telling you, come. I've come so far in my journey that if I'm by myself, my service dog is with me. If I get to the point where I've got to have my daughter with me, then my daughter is my focus and it keeps me on game.
Yeah.
If my wife's with me, I'm focused. My wife is, and a lot of the guys in the OCM have met my wife or heard from my wife. She's speaking at the June event. Shameless plug. She knows. She sees it now before I even realize stuff's happening, and she'll get me out of environments. She'll kind of, hey, are you good? Are you okay?
See, that's my wife.
Yeah.
Like she guides me, so I can go into crowds with her, and I'm very comfortable.
Yeah. I'm not comfortable, but I can get through it.
Well
I hate crowds.
She also puts him in the fucking crowds.
Yes.
Ah. Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah. she, That's why she got
this. This October, we've been married 23 years.
So. You have to go in the crowds. Yeah. I mean, you're
behind it. She is an extrovert on colossal proportions.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very much social butterfly. But last October, my son and I, my middle son, he's 21, we went to go see Five Finger Death Punch and a couple other at a concert. And I was super nervous because the wife wasn't going to be with me. I'm going to be in a big crowd. There's going to be people everywhere. Like, how am I going to get through this?
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
But because the kids have grown up watching everything, he, not as good as his mom, but he did serviceable enough to get me in and out without having any major issues. Yeah.
That's good.
He's part of the E4 mafia. So.
He's a shitbag E4.
That boy damn special.
That boy could not have been one of my troops. As an Air Force NCO, I'd have done strangled him. So, I mean, that's how big of a shammer he is.
Lots of appointments.
And he's guard shams. So, yeah, like it's even
nasty
worse.
Girl. All right.
But so just that was a lot for me. I couldn't imagine being, you know, for lack of a better term, dependent on your dog to be able to navigate so many social situations. And then all of a sudden, days, weeks, months to not have that. What'd you say earlier? To lean on and to have them there to support, to not have that and be able to still expected to do those type of social situations. It's just crazy. And I assume that when you regress to a certain point, it wasn't as hard to get back to operational, but it was still a transition.
No, it was either way. It was a transition. You know, one of the things that I shared with Morgan last week or week before last, I said, you know, there's a grief process once your dog retires. I remember Pella retired and then I had to go somewhere. I had to go to an appointment or something. And I looked down in the passenger wheel well and she's not there. And it was just like, oh, I feel a hole. I just felt like I was missing up my arm. Right. Because at the end of the day, that leash is almost every day in my hand. Right. She's connected to me. And it's an adjustment period. One of the things that we always try to tell a lot of our classes, because we get to talk to every veterans class that comes in, is when that time comes, prior proper planning prevents poor performance. If you can afford to do it, if you can do it, plan the overlap so you don't have, like Morgan's doing. He's got a 2-week gap, but you ideally want to plan.
I applied last September.
Yeah,
that's pretty quick. Because I saw it coming.
But set yourself up for success so you don't have. It's better to have and not need than need and not have. Set yourself up so you're not on your own when you hit that situation when you need your dog. And of course, there are some places where. Like, we go to a lot of hockey. We go to hockey games. We go to baseball games. There's some places where the seats just are a little too tight. It would be so uncomfortable for a dog to fit in there. Hockey games, they'll be okay. But, like, the Rays games, Tampa Bay Rays games, best team in baseball right now. Shameless plug. I'll tell you about more of that later. I'll tell you about that later. You know, those seats are tight if you're not in the suites or you're not in the lower, you know, lower A through G seats. So it's almost uncomfortable to try to put a dog in people. It's uncomfortable for a person to sit there. My knees are in the seat. I got a prosthetic knee. So it's just thinking about, okay, if family can hold you down, cool. If I'm going by myself, oh, my dog's going. We'll figure it out. But if family can hold you down, then go have fun. And one of the things that we've learned is our family learns how to put on the leash, essentially. I've ran into veterans, and I'll hush after this. I've ran into veterans that I've went the whole spiel about this is who we are, Southeastern Guide Dogs. This is what we can provide. This is what we can do for you when you're a veteran. And the spouse goes, well, what about me? Well, what am I going to do if he gets a dog? I'm not going to have any. I'm his only connection. A dog can't. You know, what am I going to do now? And I was like, man, that's deep because they're so adapted. I'm like, well, now you can go live your life as his wife, not his caretaker.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting topic that a lot of couples don't think about.
Right.
Because the spouse is so used to being the caretaker.
Yeah. And it goes back to functioning.
Yep.
Right. When we think we're functioning, we put those blinders on to how much pressure we're putting on everyone around us. Mm-hmm. in order to function, mm-hmm. putting pressure on our dogs, putting pressure on our family, our friends, and coworkers, you know, the whole nine, how much pressure we're putting on, you know, people around us just for us to function. You know what I mean? Air quotes. So, you all right?
I'm tube.
I know the Heimlich. I'm a combat lifesaver. but yeah, I mean,
self-aid buddy care.
So is service dogs the only thing that, Southeastern guide dogs provide? I mean, as an animal.
So we only provide dogs, according to the ADA. I know what you're asking.
Yeah.
According to the ADA, the only thing that can be clarified as a service dog is a miniature horse or a service animal. So a miniature right. horse or a dog.
Right.
But we have service dogs for veterans.
Right.
We have a skilled companion dogs for veterans.
Right.
We changed the name. It was originally a emotional support animal, but right. we all know why we had to change the name to that. I won't go down that rabbit hole.
Right.
We have skilled companion dogs for veterans that just need that assistance in the house. Those yeah. dogs don't have public access rights. We have our Gold Star family programs for families of those that have lost a loved one. Obviously, they paid the ultimate sacrifice. Mm-hmm. We've broadened that umbrella. Our Gold Star dogs also go to the families of those that have lost a battle to suicide, active duty or veteran, even if they're Marines. Sorry, I had to put that in there.
Right.
we provide, now I lost my train of thought.
But the caveat, I mean, we buried the lead. The caveat on that, how many veterans has Southeastern Guide Dogs lost to suicide?
None.
Exactly.
Not a single one.
We buried that lead. So yeah, right. we're Southeastern Guide Dogs is providing dogs to Gold Star families, to include, families of veterans, who perished from suicide, mm-hmm. but not Southeastern Guide Dog recipients.
Yep. We have not had that problem.
Exactly.
And so I don't want to say a problem. We have not had that situation occur with any of our recipients. And that's that. We scream that to the rooftops everywhere we go.
Right.
Every opportunity we get, every microphone we get, we scream it to the rooftops.
With the epidemic of veteran suicide, you know, it's a very viable option.
It's rare that you can say 100% of our treatment up to this point has never led to a suicide.
Yeah.
To be able to tout that statistic
in this
community is huge.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
It means something.
And, you know, we have a buddy who's on the recipient list,
mm-hmm.
And there's what 500 or so applications each year.
We're currently at our all time high, which is a really good thing because there's a lot of people saying I need the help.
Right.
We slowed down production per se of dogs during the big C, the shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
We slowed down, so we're ramping back up. But as we get more puppy raisers in, we'll be able to get more dogs out a lot faster. So that'll cut down those wait times. So it's kind of a shameless plug for that we need puppy raisers to raise our dogs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of options there to be puppy raisers as well that we're going to be announcing here publicly here in the near future. So I would stay close to our website, guidedogs.org.
And for everyone, just on the monetary side of Southeastern Guide Dogs, you know, a lot of their, you know, is from donations.
It's all from donations.
Right? Yeah, all no from donations. Funding. So, and understand that, you know, the process of getting a service dog out to a veteran is very stringent and very thorough. And you know what I mean? Just because you're 100% disabled and things of that nature doesn't necessarily mean you qualify. So, I mean, if you believe you need a service dog, the application's online.
It is. Yes. www.guidedogs.org. That is a valid point. You know, we strive to provide the best dogs with the best possible scenarios for veterans that apply. It's not an assembly line. Every dog is handcrafted per se.
Right.
to meet the needs of a specific veteran, the way you walk, the ideas of things that you want to do in the future, the goals you have, the activities that you participate in on a daily basis. Some dogs just aren't built for that. Some dogs are high drive. They need to go out and play all day long, and they need to be with somebody who's going out and exercising. Some dogs are low drive for folks that maybe, you know, have a prosthesis and have to walk a little bit slower. It's each dog is hand tooled. So that way, if you were to make that dog into a human, it would look like their handler.
So let's put a bow on, we'll put a bow on this, because, you know, we have other engagements this evening.
And I made us late.
Yeah, and you made us late. So
my bike did catch on fire, though. I'm just saying.
I mean, yeah. So put a bow on this. Service dogs. You know, we've talked for an hour about the benefits. Give me, is there a con? Is there a downside? Exactly. I mean,
any chance you get to expand your support network in whatever form that takes, take it, and move forward
for free.
Yeah, for free. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know,
it costs you time and effort.
That's it. Be willing to ask for help.
And, we appreciate you guys, coming all the way up from Florida to be on our podcast. We appreciate it. And we'll see y'all next time.
We encourage your feedback and want to hear your stories. Hit us up, whiskeywillswounds.com. You'll find links to our social media and email. Remember, everyone deployed around the world, those still missing in action and prisoners of war, the homeless veterans in this country, and those veterans lost to suicide each year. Find a reason, not an excuse.
Thank you for listening. See you next time.